Welcome, everybody, to Productivity Book Group. I'm your host and facilitator, Ray Sidney Smith. Thanks for joining us here on the live call or on the podcast for Productivity Book Group. Today, we are going to be discussing Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives by Gretchen Rubin. Gretchen Rubin, of course, being the New York Times and international bestselling author of The Happiness Project and Happier at Home, and now the bestseller Better Than Before. And I think she has a forthcoming book now called The Four Tendencies, I think. So Gretchen is no stranger to the productivity world, and she has these happiness project groups that are running all over the United States and probably the world. Very, very cool phenomenon and a phenomenal success. And so Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives is all about change, right? And how we do personal change management. And you know, what Gretchen has come upon as a thesis here is that we do this through habits, through forming habits and through changing our habits, transitioning from one habit to the other. And so just so that we're all on the same page, Gretchen put this together this really cool thing called the Habits Manifesto, the Better Than Before Habits Manifesto. And so what I wanted to do was to just go through those very quickly for us all so we're all on the same page in terms of the 12 sort of strategies that she talks about in terms of being able to develop habits, and then we'll kick into the conversation and start talking about the book itself. So these are the 12 items that she has as part of her Habits Manifesto, right? So number one, what we do every day matters more than what we do once in a while. Number two, make it easy to do right and hard to go wrong. Number three, focus on actions, not outcomes. Number four, by giving something up, we may gain. Number five, often get before here. Number six, when we give more to ourselves, we can ask more ourselves. Number seven, we're not very different, but those differences are very important. Eight, surroundings. Number nine, we can't make people change, but we can change others. But when we change, others may change. I'll say that again. Number nine, we can't make people change, but when we change, others may change. Number 10, we should make sure the things we do to feel better don't make us feel worse. Number 11, we manage what we monitor. Number 12, once we're ready to begin, begin now. Okay, and so this is actually a PDF handout that's available to download from GretchenRubin.com, and I'll place a link to that, of course, in our show notes. So with that, we have the Habits Manifesto, and what Better Than Before does is it opens up sort of this dialogue that Gretchen has with us in terms of her sort of exploration of her own habit change, the habit changes of her friends and people around her, and her research into the science and sort of studies that have been done around it, the books that have been published and so on and so forth. So let's just start off with the book itself as a whole in terms of your experience with it and what you thought about it as you sort of approached the book and made your way through it. What was your initial sort of reactions to the book as a whole, its writing, maybe the sort of story profiles that were put in there? What were your feelings about the book?
I liked it. To me, it was an easy read. And I think a lot of the book is how much you like Gretchen Rubin as a person, because so much of it was her experiences and her story. So I think if you liked reading about her adventure, you'd like the book a whole lot better than if you didn't really care so much about her as a person. But I thought it was very good and actually enjoyed the detail that she went in and the way that she revealed her own journey through life.
Definitely. I think that, you know, it's really fascinating when authors sort of use themselves as guinea pigs. And I think that Gretchen does this really well. I mean, she did this well in The Happiness Project, but I think she continues along that methodology here in Better Than Before. And I think there's something really fun to learning about the author and about who they are as a person. I think I learned so much more about her, not having been a heavy blog reader, reader of her blog for now that I've read Better Than Before. I've actually doubled back and started reading more of her earlier stuff from when she was writing about The Happiness Project and in the early days of the Happiness Project. So really, really fascinated. I appreciate your thoughts there, Frank. And how about you, Bonnie?
I like her writing. I find it a nice mix of formal and informal, talking about her own daily thing and anecdotes, and then bringing in the wider world and research and academics. So I like her writing. And I also really enjoyed the
topic.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, and I imagine one that's acutely attuned for us here in the productivity community. And, you know, what I found to be interesting was her sort of compare and contrast with her sister, and how, you know, she's about their differences and their sort of communications, and using her sister as sort of a sounding board. And for those who don't know, Gretchen now has a podcast with her sister. You know, it's a weekly podcast, and I'll put, of course, a link to the podcast in the show notes. And so it's sort of interesting to sort of hear her and her sister, you know, having discussions about these things, you know, in by voice and that kind of thing. So you get to know them a little bit better in terms of their dynamic. So very, very cool stuff there. So let's start off with the let's continue on with the discussion regarding the sort of the concept she's talked about, which is sort of like knowing yourself, right, and sort of identifying who you are in terms of habit development. What were your thoughts about the ideas that she sort of promulgated around what she calls the four tendencies, or sort of these four personality types that she covers? What were your thoughts there? I thought this was really a fascinating piece of work, and I'd like to spend some time talking about it. But she talks about these four types, and then goes into, you know, quite a bit of, you know, time sort of helping us understand four types, you know, not only the four types, but then we have these distinctions, as she calls them, that sort of help us, you know, further define or refine our understandings of ourselves. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, Ray, for me, when I got to that part, that really grabbed me and said, Frank, this is a book you're probably going to wind up reading all the way through, because it really set up some structure, and I immediately started to put myself into the, you know, which one of those am I? And first I thought I was one, and then I realized, no, I'm actually this other, and I think it's important. I have never really thought about those particular roles and how we're going to respond depending on whether we want to uphold our own expectations to ourselves versus our expectations, someone else's expectations on us. So I thought that was one of the real hallmarks of the book, and with some real structure that everything else could sort of encapsulate.
Agreed. And just so that you know, there's a quiz on her website, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes that will take you through it. It's sort of a survey, and as you take the little quiz, it tells you actually what type you are, which of the four tendencies you fit into as a category.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kind of thing.
I like that, because I felt it was taking some realities into account, which I'm not complaining about the internet. I love the internet, but a lot of the times when you are surfing or mark down an article to read about how to improve something, it doesn't take some of those differences into account. And it's just like, yes, here are the great things to do in the morning. Here are the things to do to become a morning person. And she's like, well, really, you know, some people are larks and some people are owls, and, you know, maybe you can't change that.
Right, right. And it takes into the fact that there, as she, you know, she sort of debunks the myth that there's a one that all fits all system for change management. And you know, we read Changeology several months ago, you know, several episodes ago, and by Dr. John C. Norcross, and he talks about Changeology or change management, and he uses one specific method. But what I liked about it was, I think that the two of them together, actually, you know, thinking about better than before in the context of Changeology, really starts to help. Sort of like the two of them together are very, very well paired, because, you know, Changeology, you know, for those of you who have not read the book or listened to that episode, you can jump back to it, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes also. But, you know, the idea here is that you're matching where you are in the process of change. And I think that then if you can use the strategies that she talks about, you know, in those later parts, then the right strategies will work for you. I think that the two of them paired together are really a powerful tour de force. in habit change. So, you know, I really like that. For those who might be listening and don't know the four tendencies or these sort of four you know sort of personas that she's created, they are upholders, and she calls upholders those people who respond. This is quoting from her blog, who respond readily to outer and inner expectations. And Gretchen, fully, you know, accepts that she's an upholder. And then questioners. So we have upholders. Then we have questioners, those people who question all expectations, and they'll meet an expectation if they think actually all expectations into inner expectations. Then there's obligers. Obligers meet outer expectations but struggle to meet the inner ones, right? So the ones that they impose on themselves. And then finally, there are rebels. And basically, rebels resist all expectations, outer and inner alike. And again, that's partially quoting and quoting from her blog. And so I know several rebels, which is really interesting. and you know, the funnier part to that is that, you know, I fit probably into the upholder category and maybe more obliger. And so I'm very much aware of that, which is why I tend to be someone who adheres to the strategy of accountability, right? So she has these different strategies. And the funny part is that for some reason I tend to, by virtue of being born into an environment with lots of rebels, but then also having and attracting a lot of rebels into my life, whether that be, romantic or, platonic relationships, as well as then hiring people around me and working with people around me who tend to be rebels, which is so remarkably odd considering that that just drives me up a wall. So there you go. I don't know it, but it's something that I think from reading the book I learned, and now I'm so much more cognizant of saying, oh, you know what? If this person is that kind of person, I should probably, you know, figure out whether or not I actually want to bring them closer, you know, sort of my pull method to relationships, and maybe not pull people who are, you know, rebels closer to me, because it's a struggle once you have too many. So other thoughts about sort of the distinctions, you know, so then she talks about these distinctions, these abilities to sort of, further define. Bonnie, you talked about sort of the owl versus the lark, morning person versus versus sort of an evening person, those people who are overbuyers and underbuyers. Was it easy to identify yourself as these particular categories? And what did you learn about them and maybe about the people around you, you know, sort of like I did in terms of, you know, sort of quickly identifying that I clearly fit into a category, and I had a lot of people in my life who fit outside of that category. You know, sort of there's a sort of yin and yang. Did you notice any of that? What were your sort of thoughts as you sort of came into contact with that information?
Well, I sort of quickly pegged myself as an obliger. You know, if I look at my to-do list and there's some things on there that other people are waiting on from me, and other things on there that, commitments that I make to myself, I tend to do those to fulfill that other person first. But then as I started to read the descriptions more, I realized, well, no, I'm actually more of an upholder because I also fulfill my own. And I thought it was, you know, very interesting, and, you know, I could start to see these four roles or these four tendencies in other people and start to go, yep, that one's a rebel, and that one's a questioner. So I like that sort of quadrant framework that she has.
Yeah, and it very much sort of suits, it's not exact, but, you know, for many years, psychologists have used sort of a quadrant system, you know, sort of a way in which to peg people along an X, Y axis of their personality types, you know, from the Kiersey temperament sorter. You know, Myers-Briggs uses the same, you know, for the four characteristics, you know, so that you get identified sort of in this quadrant perspective. You know, we have the Franklin Covey matrix or the Merrill Covey matrix. You know, some people call it the Eisenhower matrix, whatever you want to call it. Sort of importance and urgency as metrics of things, and where people sort of fit into, where they tend to be in that. You know, getting things done. David Allen produced the GTDQ of having the quadrants. You know, where you fit into, whether captain and responder down to victim respond. I'm sorry, captain commander down to victim responder. So we have lots of we tend to want to create this sort of these matrices in life, and I found it to be, it's always useful to be able to categorize yourself, even when the category is not perfect. It's never going to be perfect to identify you. We're all suited to randomness, but it is very helpful to identify where you lean, where you'll, you know, go to naturally, usually. I found that to be very fascinating. I think it's a really interesting, and as I said at the top of the call, I believe that she's actually writing a whole book about the four tendencies now. And so I'm very curious to see when that book comes out, what that's all about. So it'll be really fascinating. And going further into these distinctions, as she calls them, and it seems like you, Frank, you know, you were sort of capable of identifying yourself pretty quickly. How about you, Bonnie?
I must confess that I skipped that chapter in the hope order to get farther through the book for this call. But
yeah.
I'm sure I will enjoy it once I finish it.
Yeah, and I think that it's really not it's not about, you know, sort of anything more than understanding, you know, whether or not you. So she has different categories. I just off the top of my head, you know, she has these sort of marathoner versus sprinter, someone who's willing and capable, you know, to basically do little bits along a path. And, you know, that's sort of, you know, the little bits leading up to the goal are very, very good for them, whereas some people need to really have concentrated periods where they, you know, she calls them sprinters, I think, and the ability to sort of do marathon versus sprinting, you know, and I think that that's, you know, good for one part, which is you can feel like a marathoner at times and feel like a sprinter at times. I know that I do, but my tendency is toward doing and being a marathoner, right? That's how I am. I want to be doing all the time, and I always want to be doing little things toward it. And actually, you know, those people who I feel in my experience of you know, coaching people and teaching, you know, various productivity principles over time, is seeing that people who sprint tend to be procrastinators, because I think it gives them the greatest dopamine kick. You know, it gives them the greatest sort of, you know, the greatest amount of achievement or feelings of achievement when they get up to a deadline and they sprint to the finish line, and it's like, hurrah, I got this big goal done, you know. and unfortunately, that makes them poorer, you know, in other areas of their world, because then what is necessary is really being able to turn things into smaller chunks. So if they look at everything as a sprint, they become overwhelmed very easily, because everything's a big chunk of things, you know, like a big chunk of what I have to get done. And so if there isn't a natural deadline, due date, or, you know, time boundness, you know, then you get overwhelmed because you don't know when and how to get that thing done. So, you know, there's that function. She talks about underbuying and overbuying, basically people who, will resist purchasing anything, and people who will then just buy anything, that kind of thing. And, you know, I tend to be an underbuyer in some categories of my life, and an overbuyer in some categories of my life. In the category of electronic gadgets, I'm an overbuyer. you know, there's a
overbuying with electronic gadgets and books, and underbuying with everything else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've tons and tons of books and tons of electronic gadgets, and I've actually recently been accused of being a digital gadget hoarder, and because I'll get a new laptop, and then I'll keep the old one, and then I'll keep the old one, and then I'll keep the old one. I'll say, oh no, I'm gonna put Linux Mint on that one. I'm gonna fix this one up. I'm gonna add new tools to that older one and make it just as good as new. You know, so we all fit into those.
Pretty soon, a year's gone by.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have a laptop right now that has been sitting on my someday maybe list. that has, it's an old HP Inspiron. I'm sorry, it's a Dell Inspiron. And I call her Bertha. Bertha's a wonderful old laptop. But she's seen better years. But she's perfect for Linux Mint. And so putting Linux on it and I have several, you know, computers that have Linux on it, and I would be totally fine with it. But she would be a great Linux laptop. And so she's been sitting there on my someday maybe list for quite some time. So I just have to find the right amount of time to be able to install it. But yeah, that's my, you know, revelation from reading Ruben's book.
I have a similar project with an old iPad. I have it sitting on I've made a few steps. I've gotten it to the dresser. My plan is to make it, put like a fancy alarm on there and have the calendar show up in the morning and the weather, just like sort of use it for morning things. Here's your OmniFocus list. Nothing else, just for that, but I haven't actually done that yet. It's made it to the dresser, and that's it. So does that make me a marathoner or a sprinter?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. You know, I think it's something that you have to self-define as opposed to necessarily, you know, having someone else define you. I think it also, you know, like, that's the whole thing about at least the four, you know, major personality types, at least under the Kiersey, you know, concept, is that you can guess at what other people are and interact and engage with them on that level, but until they know who they are and are comfortable with that and you tell other people who you are, that sort of conversation is sort of talking past one another. You know what I mean? So I think in order for there to be good habit change, especially in one of, we'll get to this in a little bit, which is, you know, sort of accountability and how your habits and change affect other people, the reality is that it really requires quite a bit of communication and talk in terms of talking about how you see yourself and how others see you and coming toward the center. You know, so it's like if I see you as a
manifesto, we can't.
Yeah.
But when we change, others may change.
You got it. And so, you know, the goal is for everyone to sort of come closer to the center there so that we're capable of bettering, you know, not to play on the book's title, but, you know, sort of bettering in that capacity, but more so to the effect of really being able to communicate better about our needs and wants as it relate to anything in life, but in this particular category of habit change. So continue on, just the last couple of ones that I remember are, she talked about being people who are finishers versus openers, people who like completion versus people who like to sort of start and then run away, you know, because they're like, this is a cool project, let's go start it, and then they're not really the ones who will complete it. And again, I think Marcus Buckingham talks about this in First Break All the Rules, and, you know, the idea is that we all have strengths and weaknesses, and you know, it's really important for us to be able to identify those strengths and weaknesses. And instead of attempting to bolster the weaknesses, you know, it's like instead of trying to put, you know, like dam the holes,